Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. And as we move closer to the Halloween weekend coming up, the holiday coming up, we are excited to have in studio with us today Julie Graysbrook. She is a paranormal investigator, and we can't wait to learn more about what she does and what that means. And it's great to see you again. You were here last year.
I was. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you were actually last year you were working with the Leduc. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, we haven't done that yet this year. We're trying to coordinate things. It's just been a really busy year, so.
So you are busy as a paranormal investigator.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me exactly what that means, please.
Well, especially around this time of the year, the veil between our world and the other side thins, so it's much easier for spirits to pass through, and you've got more hauntings this time of year than you do any other time of the year.
Is that because of Halloween?
I think Halloween is celebrated because of
All Saints and All Souls Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you think that is part of the reason that you say that veil is thinner?
Well, it's just a physical thing that the veil between our world and the other side thins to a point where it's much easier for souls to pass through it and come back and visit.
And we should not be afraid of that, right?
You know, the spirits are just people. People without their bodies. They're good, bad, and indifferent, just like everybody else. And yeah, we've met our share of nasty ones, but you know, for the most part, they're just average people.
How did you get into your line of work?
Well, when I was 7, I was diagnosed with leukemia, and while I was in the hospital, I had a near-death experience.
What did that look like to a 7-year-old?
I guess I didn't really think about it at all. I mean, it just happened, and I wasn't afraid. It was the most peaceful, serene experience of my life. And, you know, to this day, I'm not afraid of death. There was another spirit there with me that I think was more or less there as a guide. And I woke up just knowing for a fact that there's more than one way to the divine.
When you look back on that experience, did you articulate it right away as a 7-year-old, or were you afraid to tell your parents?
No, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody until I was in my 40s. Because I just, you know, my parents were so, so afraid of losing me that I didn't want to tell them, hey, by the way, I just about died. So I waited until I was in my 40s to let them know. You should have seen the look on my dad's face, because he's a firm believer in spirits and the paranormal. I don't think my mom knew what to think.
So how did that form you?
Well, I am a medium, so I can hear them and speak with them and sometimes smell them and feel them. And so that's really what got me into being interested in the paranormal to begin with.
So how did you know that you were a medium?
The first investigation that I was ever on, it was at the Leduc, and one of the Leduc family members was following us around, and I was able to articulate what she looked like. And they brought me down to the floor where they have all of the family pictures, and I walked right over and pointed to Mimi, and I said, that's her. That was my first investigation ever, and the leader of the group just about fell on the floor.
Did you know you had these gifts as you were growing up?
No, I didn't really realize it until I was about 13. My grandmother had died, and about 6 months later, she came to me in a dream and told me that she was there to tell me that she loved me and that everything had happened the way it was supposed to happen, because I had really bad survivor's guilt. Because we had cancer at the same time, and she made, you know, I made it and she didn't. That I had huge guilt trips because of that, and she needed to come back and tell me, no, it happened the way it was supposed to happen, and don't feel guilty.
And how did you feel about that?
I woke up in tears. I mean, some people kind of poo-poo the idea of a spirit coming to you in a dream, but, you know, I firmly believe that that is a visitation.
A lot of people yearn for that, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was a blessing, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you tell your parents that?
Eventually I did. My dad, I think, was, you know, a little puzzled, not quite sure how to take that. My mother was actually a little bit put out because both myself and my grandfather had had visits from her after her death, and she hadn't. She's an only child, and so she was just harumph.
So that's when you were 13.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did you fast forward then to go on these, what did you say?
Investigations,
yes.
Well, when Ghost Hunters first came on the air, I never missed a second of that show. And I still say to this day that I think that's one of the only paranormal shows out there that was real.
That show touched you in it.
Oh, it did. It did. Mostly because they weren't trying to make anything up. They weren't trying to over-dramatize what was happening.
Because you really don't have to over-dramatize.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a lot of people believe that shows like Ghost Adventures and Paranormal State and a lot of these things are completely honest and true, and I'm just not sure that's true. If you get one or two, they're called EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon. We wear little digital recorders when we go in and do an investigation, and the spirits can't talk to us in a voice that we can hear because they resonate. They vibrate at a much higher frequency than we do. So it's a bit like a dog whistle. So when we're done with the investigation, we pack everything up, we go home the next day, we put on our headphones and we listen to the recording of us just walking around and doing the investigation. One of our investigations was one of my favorite ones. Like I said, oftentimes you can walk around and maybe get two or three EVPs, which is exciting, even if it just says hi. We had 52.
What sort of comments were made?
The first comment that was made was to our newest investigator, and he had strapped his... We put him on straps so we don't have to carry him around, our recorders, and he put his on within 2 minutes of walking in the door. He had a female voice very clearly say, "We're dead. What do you want with us?" And I got called over to the house, and they said, "You got to hear this." And we must have listened to it just like 45 times saying, "No, that couldn't have been what we heard." So we'd hear it again. Yes, it is what we heard. Most of them aren't that dramatic.
Were you called to this place by somebody, or did you just want to investigate it yourself?
We took it. We had another person who we, case manager. So she and I chaired the job. And we went down and had lunch at the Mississippi Bell and told the manager who we were and what we did, and we'd be really interested. And she just lost it. She's, "Oh my gosh, that would be fantastic." And so she told everybody who ever worked there, and they told customers. And so when we got there, the ghosts already knew that we were coming. So we got a couple of snarky remarks.
The Mississippi Bell, I think, is a place where people have said over the years, people that have worked there,
oh yes,
have had experiences there. Tell us about some of what you know.
We were told a story. There's a table in the corner. They used to call it Table 11, and the owner of the Mississippi Bell at the time, Veronica Doffing, I think that was her name, used to take the books and go through the books sitting at that table and just kind of keep an eye on the staff and the guests and make sure everybody was taken care of and everything was going the way it was supposed to. People would ask to sit at table 11 because there was a couple there who had gone for dinner, and they asked for wine, and the server came out with a carafe of wine, tried to pour it in the glass, and the glass moved. Apparently, Veronica didn't want them drinking. I don't know, but... And twice she tried to pour the wine, and twice the glass moved. And it wasn't a glass tabletop. It was just, you know, a tablecloth. And so that's always been a big story. While we were there, the owners talked about a room in the basement. They called it the dish room. And it was just keeping extra dishes and supplies and stuff down there, and she hated it. She wouldn't go into that room. She said it feels awful. So we went down there, and two investigators, one of them was choked, and the other one was hit, and the lead investigator got everybody out of the room, went looking for me, and says, "It's time for the big guns. Julie, you're with me."
You're the big guns?
I'm the big guns. Yeah, all 5 3/4 inch of me. But we went in there, and a couple of other people went in there with us, and one of the other investigators and I saw a man who was tied to a chair with dish towels and was getting beaten by a baseball bat. Now, that place used to be kind of a gambling den as well back in the day. And if you won too much money, they'd slap you in a box and throw you in the river. Well, this guy died by getting beaten with a baseball bat. So my friend and I told him, "This isn't happening anymore. You're acting like this is still going on, you know, and this is, 100 years or whatever since you died. You can leave." And I watched as the dish towels fell away, and he stood up and he walked into the light. And in the meantime, the leader of the group was keeping the nasty man with a baseball bat at bay, just kind of, I don't know, baiting him so that he, you know, we had time to get the other guy out of there. And once the guy walked into the light, it was like someone had turned on the light in the room. All of a sudden, the heaviness that we were feeling fell away, and it just was like a completely different room.
So what do you think you did? You gave these people the opportunity to leave?
Yeah. And the little thug with the baseball bat, he's still there as far as I know, but he doesn't have any power anymore. We took away his toy, and the last time I was there, he just didn't seem to have any power to hurt anybody.
Are you ever afraid when you do some of your investigative work?
Not really. I have my spirit guide that goes with me, and every once in a while you get a spirit that doesn't want to be honest with you, because they can lie too. Sometimes I'll ask him, "Okay, Pete, you know, is this guy telling me the truth?" "No, he's not telling you the truth." "Okay, well, let's try this again." And most of the time, it's not as dramatic as, you know, we experienced at the Mississippi Bell. Most of the time, it's just people who missed out going into the light or didn't want to at the time.
What does going into the light mean to you?
Crossing the veil into the next world.
And how do you think people miss out on that?
Well, they can't decide whether or not to go, or they're afraid. There are people who think maybe they've done something wrong in life, and they don't want to face consequences, so they just won't go, and then they're stuck. So, you know, helping them know that they're not going to be judged, they're just going to go into the light and start their next phase of their life.
So do you think that a lot of the spirits you encounter have never left, or do some leave and come back?
I think that there are a lot of each. That was one of the first things I learned my first investigation over at Leduc, was that they can cross into the light and then come back in visitation, because that whole family comes back and keeps an eye on the house. Except for Minnie's husband, Vincent, who was, he was a real jerk. He was very abusive and an alcoholic, and they banished him to the basement, and he can't leave.
So he is still in the basement?
He's still in the basement. One of the first things he did when, you know, my first investigation, we went down there, and he took a running start and went right through me.
Did it hurt you?
It kind of knocked the wind out of me.
And then what did you do?
I sat down. I sat down and went, whew, and gave myself a couple of minutes, and luckily the lead investigator was down there with me, so he, you know, made sure everything was okay, and we continued. But that was not something that I was anticipating, especially the first investigation.
If somebody's listening and they're thinking, "Oh gosh, I would love to be visited by somebody that has passed away," can you ask these people to come visit you?
That's tricky, because a lot of people have called us saying, you know, "We've got all of this activity in the house, and it seems really violent, and we don't really know what to do about it, and we're thinking maybe we need to move into a new house." A lot of that has to do with somebody using a Ouija board. And I know a lot of people use them for fun, but you know, on the other hand, you wouldn't take your car and drive down to Hennepin Avenue and stop the first drug dealer and say, hey, you want to come home with me? Because in my mind, that's basically what you're doing. You have no idea who's going to be coming through. You may think it's your great Aunt Martha, but I'd say more often than not, it's going to be a predatory spirit that wants to come in and prey on your energy. And
so you have a healthy respect for the spirit world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is nothing to play with.
Are you happy or sad you have your gift?
I'm happy. I am, because there are a lot of people, you know, between literature and movies and TV and books, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the spirit world, about the paranormal. So if I can go in and help somebody, sometimes we can get them to cross over. Sometimes, you know, like I said, there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, and they're all thinking, well, it's I've got this evil spirit. If I can go in and talk to the homeowner or the business owner and they say, this is what we're dealing with, I go find the spirit and I say, okay, what's your name? What did you do in life? Did you live in this building? Did you have family? That sort of thing. And then we take all of this information back to the client and say, well, your spirit's name is Joe, and he worked on the railroad, and he had a wife and two children. And so we're taking this evil, awful spirit that they're terrified of and making it a person. And sometimes they're just okay with cohabiting with this spirit.
What's next for you? Do you have anything else on the docket?
Well, we're going to be doing a couple of presentations at the Phantoms Feast, which is at the Renaissance Festival grounds.
Yes.
And that's October 20th and October 27th. They're both Sunday evenings.
So can you explain how we can get tickets?
Well, you'd have to go on to the Renaissance Festival site, and they should have a phone number to be able to call in and reserve tickets. There's a lot of good entertainment, and you get a 7-course meal. Then we take a short walk around the grounds and go to several places where there's been known to be hauntings. And we talk a little bit about what's there and how people have dealt with it in the past.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today is Julie Glazebrook, and she is a paranormal investigator. And we are thrilled that she took the time to come in and just explain a little bit more about what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.